Good evening, everyone. It is fantastic to see you. I'm going to say that again because I forgot to record on the Zoom also. So I'm going to say that again. There we go. Now it's official. Baruch Hashem. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. Those who are live and those who are on Zoom, always a kavod to be able to get together in general, taking that for granted, of course, the last couple of years, and particularly to share Divrei Torah and Haggadah, which I personally, out of all the shiurim that I have as close to being part of during the year, it's my personal favorite. I always tell Jonathan that I have now, from the past 9 years of giving the shiurim, about 60 or so Haggadahs on my shelf that I still draw from today. Every year you buy one or two more, mostly Paholic. It's a big bracha. Thank you for having us here and the opportunity for all of us to give Divrei Torah. I also want to take the opportunity to thank Rabbi Rosenblum, Rabbi Finkelstein, Rabbi Fink for joining me tonight, not just because they're here, I don't have to prepare as much. That's not the reason. Because they do so much during the rest of the year in terms of their shiurim and in terms of contributing to our Torah environment in the shul and the community. It is truly appreciated, and thank you for joining me tonight to be able to share Divrei Torah on Haggadah. Without further ado, we're going to begin. And as I mentioned a minute ago, that some of them could seem familiar to Divrei Torah. There's always a chiddush in every single piece, but we're going to go through some thoughts on different parts of the Haggadah. Hopefully, b'siyata d'shmaya, be able to give over that at our siddurim. Okay, the most unpopular time to give a Dvar Torah is at the way beginning of the Seder, because you're about to begin. Everyone's hungry and everyone's tired. Got back from shul. This year, the clock changed very late, but unfortunately, I found two beautiful thoughts to share at the way beginning, before you even begin the Seder, before Kadesh or Siman even starts. The first one is from the Ben Ish Chai, actually in Parshas Vayera. It's a fascinating thought. There's a minhag that he mentions. It's a very beautiful minhag, actually. It's Lagabe Shabbos, Yom Tov. He mentions also by Pesach that when someone sets the table, Marich HaShulchan, for a Shabbos or Yom Tov or even Pesach night, you're supposed to say a certain pasuk from Yechezkel, Perek Mem Aleph, Pasuk Chafes. And the pasuk is very long. I'll say the end of the pasuk. Zeh HaShulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem. The Ben Ish Chai writes that when you set the table for Shabbos, put the tablecloth on, you're supposed to declare Zeh HaShulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem. This is the table that is set before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That alone is worthwhile to realize that our Seder table, bedecked in silver and set up so beautifully, is a Shulchan Lifnei Hashem. It's supposed to be a place where we are literally sitting and standing before God, about to share Nisim V'Niflos. That itself is worth sharing alone. But building upon that, Chazal take this pasuk in Yechezkel Perek Mem Aleph, and they mention something fascinating about the pasuk. If you look at the entire pasuk, it begins Hamizbeach Eitz Shalosh Amos Gavoa. It talks about the dimensions of the Mizbeach, which is kind of strange because the pasuk ends by saying Zeh HaShulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem. So the obvious question Chazal had was, well, if the pasuk is about the Mizbeach, then why does the same pasuk end by saying Zeh HaShulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem? So Ayin the Malbim on that pasuk in Yechezkel, Ayin the other Mefarshim there, but not for now. But the Gemara in Brachos Daf Nun Hey Amud Aleph 55a tells us a yisod, a fundamental, foundational idea about what the purpose of a table, shulchan, is, and why, in fact, the pasuk might go off on a tangent, go from mizbeach to a shulchan. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan tells us, kol zman shebeis hamigdash kayim, kol zman, the entire time we have a beis hamigdash, mizbeach mechaper al Yisrael, the altar for karbanos, it's what atones for the sins, for the misgivings, and the misdeeds of Bnei Yisrael. Va'achshav, but now without a Beis HaMikdash, Shulchano Shel Adam Mechaper Alav. Chazal say it's the table of a person, the table of a family that gives atonement to a person. And so again, doubling down on this idea that the Shulchan, the table we set before Hashem on Shabbos and Yom Tov, but particularly on Pesach, is a place of Kapara. It's a place of atonement, of achievement, and hopefully we should see it that way. That'll give a great perspective to our Seder, certainly, as we sit there on this Seder night. That's thought Aleph before you even begin the Seder. Thought number two is the Siman. And every year I think I thought one more thought about the Siman HaSeder. Again, not popular because you haven't even sat down yet to the Seder, but worthwhile to share. In the past, we shared 2 years ago from the Sheman HaTov. The Sheman HaTov said, just to repeat it because it's so beautiful, worthwhile, why do we say all the Siman HaSeder? Why Kadesh, Urchas, Karpas, Yachas? When do we ever do that? On Shabbos, do you sit down and tell your family, okay, we're starting with Kiddush, we're going to wash and say Hamotzi, and then we're going to go sit by the table. We never do that. We're going to bench. We never do that. So why on the Seder night do we declare and sing, we all know the song, the Siman HaSeder? The Sheman HaTov from Weinberger says that he suggested was because we left Mitzrayim in a Behala. They call that in English, I think, a hubbalulu, right? It was a mess. We were rushing. We were no time for the matzah to rise. Whenever you rush in life, the Sheman HaTov writes, whenever someone's rushing, you can't absorb the important messages that you need to absorb. And so the Jews left Mitzrayim, and although, of course, they were privy to many miracles of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they couldn't really appreciate them because they were all rushed. And therefore, what do we do the Seder night? We slow down. We sing the Siman HaSeder, the Kadesh Urchas, to say, even though yesteryear, in the times of the Exodus, we rushed, and we couldn't appreciate all the message of the Exodus of Mitzrayim and the miracles of God, but tonight, Kadesh Urchas, Karpas Yachas, that's what the Sheman HaTov said while we sing the Siman. I got a new Haggadah last year for Eli Melech Bitterman. Melech Bitterman, better known as Wellsprings of Torah, I think it's called in different languages. Beautiful Haggadah. When I say beautiful, I mean exquisite. Deep, divrei Torah, beautiful. I added last year to the repertoire, and he writes the following. The Machzer Vitri was the first one, Rashi's student of Simcha Vitri, to record this idea of saying the Siman HaSeder. But he writes, in the world of Chassidus, a lot more depth to just saying the order. He has a gewaldic idea. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, Das Chaf Zayin Amun Aleph, 27a, says there's a rule when it comes to Metzias, when someone loses a lost object. If you find something that somebody lost and they want to claim it, what do they have to do? Bala Bayis has to give Simanim. Exactly. Thank you for the, I hate lecturing. It's actually appreciated. They have to give Simanim. Rabbi Bitterman writes something awesome. I use that word very carefully. Awesome. He says that, who's the Baal HaBayis? We're the Baal HaBayis. What did we lose? Over the course of the year, we lost Kedusha, we lost sanctity, we lost our eloquence of saying the miracles of God, that's Magid, we lost the concepts of Hallel, of really praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what do? We begin the Seder by saying, I'm now giving the Simanim. I want to gain back all that I lost during the year, and the Simanim represents the things that we lost. And so we begin the Seder by saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that tonight at the Seder we hope to gain back all the ruchnius, all the qualities, all the character that we lost over the course of the entire year. That's worthwhile. Even though it's the beginning of the Seder, I understand, not a popular time for Divrei Torah, but in my humble opinion, that's worth a go in terms of saying something at the beginning to understand the purpose of the Seder is to gain back all that was lost over the course of the year. He doesn't, but it's fertile ground for a good drasha.
That's next year.
Right, next year we'll go through every one of the Simanim, Joshua Schneider, and tell it. Exactly. Beautiful. Exactly. Okay. All right.
Hey, Shalom Aleichem, everyone. It's a really, Bereshus Rabbanim, it's a real special schus to prepare for such a unique and exalted evening of the Leil HaSeder. So we'll move to Karpas, Thana Karpas, a very, very mysterious thing that we do at the Seder. We take a vegetable, we dip it in salt water, make a bracha, and we eat the Karpas. And if you look in the Gemara in terms of what Karpas is all about, so it gives us the I think the classic answer, the classic non-answer, Kadei Yishalu HaTinokos, that the children should ask. But Rabbeinu Manoah, on his comments on the Rambam, when the Rambam brings down the mitzvah karpas, takes it to a deeper level. And he says that the karpas is actually an allusion to the kesones pasim of Yosef. The vayitbalu oso badam, that the brothers, when they sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim, they took off his special coat that was given to him by Yaakov Avinu, and they took the coat and they dipped it in dam, and they sent it to Yaakov to say that, look what happened to Yosef, hayara ach lasu. And Yaakov responds that it must be that he was consumed by a wild animal. And connected to that, as we begin at this Seder, it's right at the beginning, we frame the entire experience by reminding ourselves of Mechiras Yosef. And when we think about it, Mechiras Yosef is really one of the catalysts that brings us down into Shevet Mitzrayim. That in many ways, the Galus begins with Mechiras Yosef. But there's not only one time that we dip a food in something else. There's another time as well. And that's exactly what the question is. The Manishtana, the Latinok is meant to ask, the Manishtana Halayla is that why is this night different? That tonight we dip twice. So the original second tibble, second dipping that took place is by the Karan Pesach. The Pasuk says, Utzvaltem oso badam, that they should dip the Karban Pesach, they should dip the Ezov into the dam, and they will mark the mezuzos and the mashkot, they'll mark the doorpost and the lintel of the doors of where they were having this original Seder on the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that they would mark off that this is a Jewish home, and this is a house that Hashem will pass over and will spare, and thereby save. And in so many ways, the tibol, the dipping that is done by the Karban Pesach, perhaps is fixing that which occurred by the original dipping and Mechiras Yosef. Where did Mechiras Yosef come from? Came from perhaps one of the earliest places that we had Sinas Kinam. That we had baseless hatred amongst brothers. But lo yachlu davru l'shalom. So much so that the brothers of Yosef weren't able to speak to him in a peaceful way. And comes along the Pesach, and what do? We show by demonstrating, by putting the dam on the doorpost, that we are relevant to each and every other person. We're unique, we're special, we're not the Mitzrayim, and we, connected to every other Jewish person, are going to be redeemed together. That it's the opposite of v'lo yachlu davru l'shalom, of not being able to speak one another because we don't feel as though we're connected, of creating a physical connection between everyone by showing that we're unique, showing that we're special, by putting that down, putting the blood on the doorpost. And Reb Chaim Vital takes it even to a step further. Reb Chaim Vital, one of the Talmidim of the Arizal, who writes so many of the Arizal teachings, brings a beautiful remez, that of course the Yontif is referred to as Pesach, and the Karban is referred to as Pesach. He says that the word Pesach could really be broken up into two words. Pesach. Peh, the mouth, begins to speak. The lo yachlu davru l'shalom, the source of the galus of Mitzrayim, perhaps in so many ways the source of so many of the galios that we experience, is that source. The lo yachlu davru l'shalom. Not being able to connect one to another and have a conversation with each other in a shalom, in a peaceful way, in so many ways, that's the source of galus. So what's the source of ge'ula? Is the exact opposite. Is the Pesach. Is opening up one's mouth, that the more you speak, the better. The more you talk to one another, the more you give each other a place to share thoughts, to share insights, to share questions, and more to be able to create that connection around the Pesach Seder, where everyone around is able to contribute something unique. And through that, become one unified chabura, one unified unit around the Karban Pesach, that's the tikkun. That's what fixes the original source that sent us down to Mitzrayim. V'lo yachlu davru l'shalom. So now, Pesach, we open up our mouths one to another, the yachlu davru l'shalom, and we're able to speak with each other in a way that creates peace. So Karpas, right at the beginning of the Seder, I think in so many ways it's such a simple thing, Chazal tells us, just to generate the question, but maybe that's exactly what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to be something strange, something different, that reminds us of Mechiras Yosef and reminds us of the dipping by the Karban Pesach, that sets the framework of the entire evening. And the entire evening is Marbel Asaper, is saying, speaking with one another, creating those real and deep connections of Yachlus Avra L'Shalom.
Beautiful, beautiful. We're now beginning Magid, Halach Ma'anya. I'm going to Mimikatz here a little bit, but I want to make sure everyone gets a chance to share the Divrei Torah, so we're going to keep the, I'll keep my eye on the clock. But I want to tell you one quick story I'm going to shorten for you. I'm part of a great chevra in West Hempstead. It's called the Sfarim Chat, that somebody started to give away Sfarim people are not using. I see people here who are on the chat. It's really, truly awesome. It's amazing. And talk about Yad Hashem, the Pesach, the holiday of seeing God's hand in life. So about 2 weeks before he passed away, somebody put on the Sfarim blog, Sfarim Chat, does anybody want the Haggadah of Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky? And I responded first, and I said, I actually do. Who would have known that 2 weeks later he would pass away and have his Haggadah in my hand? And so I figured tonight to share one or two thoughts from Rabbi Chaim in the course of his Neshama having an Aliyah, that I have a right to say such a thing, but really just to share Divrei Torah in his name is a great privilege and a zechut. It's the most famous question probably on Halach Ma'anya. We all ask it every year and give 15 new answers every year as well. The question of how can we invite Kol Dichvin Yetzev Yechol, Kol Districh Yetzev Yiftach. All those who want to come to our house can come. All those who want to come for Karban Pesach, please feel free to come in. And of course, the most famous question at the entire Seder possibly is, how can we do that? The Mishnah tells us in Mefurish, based on the Pasuk, you can only go to a house for a Karban Pesach where you are on the guest list, Menuyah. You're included amongst the guests on that Karban. So how can we exclaim so proudly, whoever wants to come for a Karban Pesach, come to our house? And every year we find new answers, Baruch Hashem, to give to that question. Rav Chaim Kanievsky Zatzal writes such an incredible thing. He says, the end of the paragraph clarifies the beginning of the paragraph. If the beginning of the paragraph says, whoever wants to come in for Pesach can come in, I is forbidden. What does the end of the paragraph say? Hashata avdi, right? Now we are slaves, right? But l'shana haba, ba'aradi Yisrael, what are we going to be? B'nei chorin. In Eretz Yisrael, you're right, you cannot do that. Now we can do that. Now we can, there's no Karban Pesach, so I want to invite somebody last minute. They can come in because there are no rules right now. But next year, in Eretz Yisrael, we can't do that. Why? He writes, because in Eretz Yisrael, at Bias Kol Tzedek, God willing, hopefully soon, there won't be anybody who's poor, who's needy, and halavai, nobody who wasn't Mona on a Karban Pesach. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky says that we're saying this year we have the ability to do that because it's mutter, there's no Karban Pesach. And halavai, he gives the bracha, the Baal Haggadah, beautiful bracha, beautiful blessing, that halavai next year, when we're in Eretz Yisrael, where there is a Karban Pesach, won't need to either, because number one, no one will be poor, and number two, everyone will have a place to go, be part of a bias, be part of a family. That's Rav Chaim Yisrael Halach Ma'anya. I give you now to our question, Rabbanim, for the rest of the parts of Magid.
Good evening, everybody here is present and on Zoom. May I? A little taller, sorry, apologize. I'm not bragging, it's just the reality. So I too am a Haggadaholic. I have to find places to hide them in the house. I'm saying it on Zoom, it's being recorded. Not the smartest thing I've ever done. One of my, so I'll just tell a quick story. When I was studying in the Gros Kollel in the late 1980s, it was not a time where there were Sharayos, Mitzvahs, the people came home for Pesach and people had a lot of relatives. So I asked my Rebbe, Rav David Miller, can we come to your house for the Seder, my Chavrusa and I? And he says, yes, but you want to have guarded expectations. Because when you go to your Rebbe's house, what kind of Seder are you expecting? You're expecting a cavalcade of chidushim. It's going to be, you can hear the Malachi Ashari singing, my Seder is for one group and one group only. What is that group? The kids. The Seder is all about the kids, and it's not just something that we say, it's something that's very much right here in the Seder, because we have the beautiful part of the Arba Banim. So the Arba Banim section has two or three important ideas I'd like to share with you. Maybe I'll also try and keep it on the short end, because I know we have a hard break at 9:45. So the first thing is, each of the four of the Arba Banim correspond with what? Psukim in the Torah. There are three psukim in Parshas Bo, which are there, which use the word bidcha, which are referring to a conversation that's going to be happening between parents and children later on. And there's another pasuk all the way in Parshas Ve'eschanan, which happens to be the answer to the Ben HaChacham. So why is this baked into our Seder? Pun somewhat intended. So I'd like to suggest a couple of ideas. The first idea is as follows. It's an idea that the Torah understands that we need to recognize everybody who is at the Seder on their level. That the Torah is able to be conveyed and passed on to an individual based on their level of understanding and where they are coming from. And sometimes at the Seder, you know, it's family time is beautiful, and sometimes it can also be a little bit challenging. Very, very important to make sure that all of the members of our Seder have a message that's appropriate for them. And so if you know who's going to be at the Seder, it's not, my personal opinion is, we want to be inspiring everybody to maximize their experience so they could feel the following, feel the feeling of being a person who actually came out of Mitzrayim. I would like to share with you an insight of the Aruch, not an insight, but more of a directive from the Haggadah of the Baal Aruch HaShulchan. It says, Mipnei Shatorah Tivsa Kein Shetihyeh Derech She'ilad V'Teshuvah. The Haggadah Shal Pesach, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, specifically has to be done, question and answer, the Aliyah Dezem Misparer Ha'anyan Yoser V'Nishreshes Emunas HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Leiv HaBanim. As a teacher, I can tell you the best thing to happen is for the students to drive the lesson with their questions. When you get up and give a lecture, it's about you. When they're asking the question, it becomes about them. Very, very important at the Seder to make sure that the experience, the more active participation in questions we get from the younger people and the older people, like the World Talmidim for Life, right? World Talmidim for Life. The more questions we get people to answer, the more they are part of the Seder. Just one more thought that I saw in pretty much every Haggadah I looked in. I brought a small sampling of my collection from the house. Again, snuck them out. Nobody saw me. Very, very interesting. The four sons could also be understood on any type of level you want. There are four levels of Torah. There's Pshat, Remez, Drash, and Sod. And I saw beautiful ideas on the Pshat level. I saw beautiful ideas on the Drash level. I saw beautiful ideas on the Remez level. And I even saw on the Sod level. There's something in the Haggadah for everything, for all of us. And that's why we start, I think, with the Arba Banim, to recognize that we have to tailor each message so that everybody is participating, is getting something out of it.
Mishas Regaler, Mishas the other Rabbanim. Move to Baruch Shomer HaTzachos, so moving along in Magid, where we begin to talk about the actual story of the Golus and the Geula. And one of the first things we do is by turning the clock back, very far back in history, and talking about when Avraham Avinu was informed that his children would be sent into Golus. We start with a paragraph which says, Baruch Shomer HaTzachos Oli Yisrael, that blesses Hashem who keeps his promise to Bnei Yisrael. Hashem promised that when we go down to Mitzrayim, he's going to take us out with great wealth, Berchush Gadol. And we go on to tell the psukim of the Bris Bein HaBesarim, in which Avraham was given this nevuah. And one fascinating comment that the Mefarshim have about the Bris Bein HaBesarim comes in the context of Avraham Avinu's Asara Nisyonos, his 10 tests. The Mishnah teaches us in Pirkei Avos, Avraham Avinu was tested 10 times in his life, And the Mefarshim debate as to what exactly those 10 tests were. And we find in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, Parak Kaf Ches, that the Medrash tells us that the Bris Bein HaBesarim was one of Avraham's 10 tests. Being told that his children would be slaves in Mitzrayim and then redeemed was one of the 10 tests of Avraham. And the question is, how's this a test? We understand Akedas Yitzchak. Avraham was told, Shech your son. Your son you waited for 100 years. You waited for your entire life. You dreamed for. Now take that son and shech him. That's a test. We understand Hashem says, Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladzecha. Hashem says to Avraham, you know that land you lived in your entire life, your childhood, your middle age years, your adult years, leave that land, leave everything you know, leave your family, leave your home, and go to a new land. That's a test.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bris Bein HaBesarim, what about the Bris Bein HaBesarim was a test? It was bad news. It was hard to accept
mm-hmm.
that his children would be slaves in Mitzrayim. But where was the test? Where was the decision that Avraham needed to make? I once heard an explanation based on another Medrash. The Medrash writes in Bereishis Rabbah Parshim Mem Dalet, that the Bris Bein HaBesarim was not just information that was given to Avraham. Rather, at the Bris Bein HaBesarim, Avraham was given a choice. Hashem said to Avraham, I'm going to show you a picture of your children going down to Mitzrayim and being slaves in Mitzrayim. And if you want, you could accept that. That's one option. The other option is your children are going to have great lives. They're going to have prosperous lives. They're never going to suffer. They're never going to feel any pain. They'll always be on the top. But one day they'll end up in Gehenna. And he said, Avraham, you choose. You decide which one you want. Do you want the Gullus in Mitzrayim? The 400 years of slavery of Avadum v'inuosam, but in the end of the day, it's going to end in Olam Haba. It's going to end in something much better. Or Avraham, you decide, you choose. Do you want to be prosperous? Do you want to be on the top of the world? Everyone's always going to respect Klal Yisrael. But the end game is going to be Gehenna. And he gave the choice to Avraham. And that was Avram's test. Avram's test was how was he going to make that decision? Was he going to be able to make the decision, to have the courage to say, I know what's right. I know the correct decision is Olam Haba. I know the correct decision, of course, is that long-term gain. But to be able to subjugate his children to 400 years of avarice, to be able to choose the Galus Mitzrayim because of the knowledge that in the long run it's the best thing for his children, that was the test that Avram needed to overcome. And by saying the Bris Bein HaBesarim at the Haggadah, in the Haggadah, at the night of the Seder. So yes, on one level, we're beginning the story. We're beginning the story of Avdus, and we're telling the story of where Avdus began. But on another level, the Haggadah is also teaching us a lesson. One of the many lessons of the Haggadah is teaching us the lesson of Avraham Avinu, that historically, Klal Yisrael know how to make decisions that are sometimes difficult in the short run because of the long-term gain. That when we're faced with a difficult decision that we need to make because our values are at stake or because something that we stand for is at stake, and we know in the long term, we know the right decision. It's going to cause us some pain. It's going to be difficult a little bit at the time in the here and now. But Avraham Avinu teaches us that built into the DNA of Klal Yisrael is we know how to make that decision for the long-term gain.
It's also good to have the long game message at the beginning of the day there because it's a long game.
I apologize for the lack of order, but we're going to move back to the Arba Banim. So, Asana Mechacham. The Chacham asks, Maha Edesachukiva Mishpatim Asher Siva Hashem Elokeinu Eschem. The Chacham asks, what are all these laws and various rules that we are following that Hashem has commanded us? And the response is, Va'achat ha'omer lo kehilcho sapasach. You respond by telling him, they are not allowed to, a little bit ambiguous and difficult words to translate, but usually you don't eat after the afikomen. It's usually how we would translate it. This is the Haggadah that I have over here from Rav Nachman Solomon, the Mashgiach in Beis Medrash Haggadah in Lakewood. It's a beautiful insight based on a number of other marmakomos. Of all the halachos, the response of the Chacham is very curious about all of the rules and regulations that we follow when it comes to, seemingly when it comes to Pesach. He's bothered, he wants to know, why do we have so many of them? Rav Matzitzel Solomon says it's not just about the Leil HaSeder, the Seder night that the Chacham is bothered by, but the Chacham is bothered by the same question that the Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo is bothered by. The question is, why do we have so many mitzvos throughout the entire year that are all Zeich L'Yetzias Mitzrayim? That we make Kiddush, Zeich L'Yetzias Mitzrayim, Shabbos, Zeich L'Yetzias Mitzrayim. We put on Tefillin, Zeich L'Yetzias Mitzrayim, Mezuzah, and so on and so on. We have so many mitzvos, Zeich L'Yetzias Mitzrayim, that isn't it enough that we make ourselves crazy on Pesach to make a Seder? And we make this big event once a year, why do we have to then translate that into the rest of the year of so many mitzvot? You can't move without encountering a mitzvah that Zecher L'Yetzias Mitzrayim. The answers, as we answer in the Haggadah, Kehochos HaPesach, that Ein Maftir Nachar HaPesach Hafi Komen, similar to the answer of what we talk about when it comes to the Karban Pesach. Ideally, the Pesach is supposed to be the last thing that we eat. It's actually one of the leader halachos, all the way at the end of Arvei Pesachim, at the very end. The basic understanding of what you're telling the Chacham is that you don't open up a Maseches Pesachim, and you begin with Bedikas Chametz, and you go through all the Pesachim discussing all of the halachos pertaining to the Yontif of Pesach, all the way up until you get to the end of the Afikomen. But Matzitzel Solomon says something so beautiful. Why are you not allowed to eat anything after the Afikomen? Why not? Up here, why not? Exactly, because you want to keep the taste of the Pesach, or in our case the Matzah, you want to keep that taste in your mouth. So says Rav Matzah Sel Solomon, that's the message that we tell to the Chacham, really to everyone else who's at the table. We tell them that we're doing all of these events tonight to have this big exciting event that's not a one and done, but it's going to continue into the entire year. That all of these sodos and emunah that we have discussed, the principles of faith, the foundations of our Judaism, which we discuss together, and the night of the Seder is not just supposed to be one night a year, but it's supposed to have one night a year that impacts the way that we act for the rest of the year. That all the other mitzvos that we do, so many, again, not moving without a Zeicher L'Yetzias Mitzrayim, Afata Omer Lo Kehochos HaPesach, that the taste that a person is able to have in their mouth the night of the Seder, from tasting all of these exciting matzah, maror, talking about the Pesach, we should be zocheh to have the Pesach, all those exciting things, you don't eat anything after the Pesach. You keep it in your mouth. Keep that taste with you the entire year. Afata omer lo kilchos ha-Pesach. You don't end it, but it keeps going into the rest of the year.
Okay, moving forward a little bit more towards the end of Magid, the Esther Makos, when we talk about the 10 Makos that Hashem brought in Mitzrayim, there is a fundamental question asked on the Esther Makos, and that is, why were they necessary? If Hashem wanted to take the Jews out of Egypt, he could have done so in a second. He could have done so in a minute, and he could have said, Moshe, go to Mitzrayim and take them out, and it's going to happen right away. Why did we need a long process of Esther Makos, Dam Tzvadei, Akinim Aro, spanned over the course of pretty much an entire year? The Ramban, in the end of Parshas Bo, addresses this question, and the Ramban writes that the Makos served the purpose of introducing to Mitzrayim, introducing to the world and to Mitzrayim, certain fundamentals about belief, which the Mitzrim denied. The Mitzrim denied three core elements of belief. Number one, they denied the existence of Hashem. Number two, they denied the Hashkacha of Hashem, Hashem's providence that he's involved in the world. And number three, they denied the Echoles of Hashem, his ability, his unparalleled ability that Hashem could do anything he desires. And the Ramban writes, every single Makkah came to prove one of these things. Some on the Metzios Hashem, that Hashem existed. Some on the Hashgachas Hashem, that Hashem is involved in the world. And some on the Echoles Hashem. L'man teidak ki in kamoni b'chol ha'aretz. To know that Hashem is the ultimate power and there's no power higher than Hashem. Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldbach asks an intriguing question on this approach, on the comments of the Ramban. The purpose of the Makos was to teach Paro about belief in Hashem, to the point where Paro would say, I believe in Hashem, now I see that Hashem exists, so he's going to acquiesce, and he's going to let the people go, and he's going to let Klal Yisrael go. So then how is it that we find that throughout the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, one of the most perplexing aspects of the story that Mefarshim, the Rishonim, have dealt with at length is Hashem hardened Paro's heart. And Hashem took away Paro's Bechira Chavshas, took away Paro's free will, and did not allow Paro to make the decision to let the Jewish people go. So says Rav Goldberg, I don't understand. If the whole point of the Makos was to impress upon Paro, I'm Hashem, I exist. Not only do I exist, but I'm involved. Not only am I involved, but I'm the ultimate supreme power. And now that you recognize that, so you should send Klal Yisrael out. So then, how do you take away Paro's free will? The whole point was that Paro, of his own free will, should recognize these things and set Klal Yisrael free. So Rav Goldberg points to a comment of the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva Perek Vav that the answer to this question, Rambam explicitly asks this question. And the Rambam says the answer is that this is the message of the Eser Makos. The message of the Eser Makos, says the Rambam, is that a person can lose his free will. And that if a person reaches a level as low as Paro, if a person exercises his free will again and again and again for the wrong reasons, then a person's free will can be taken from him. And a person can be in a position where someone is impressing upon him Hashem's existence and Hashem's hashkacha and Hashem's power again and again, and a person can still deny to see it because his free will has been taken away. And says the Rambam, that in and of itself is the purpose of the Makos. And when put in this way, the message that the Rambam is teaching us is something remarkable. And that is that what the Eser Makos teach us, what we're supposed to think about when we remember the Eser Makos, is two things. Number one, it's supposed to get us to take Hashem seriously, certainly. Hashem's existence and his hashgacha and his yicholak, to understand the magnitude of and the core elements of our belief in Hashem. But it's also about learning to take ourselves seriously. It's about learning that Hashem gave each and every one of us bechira. He created each and every one of us with free choice. And that's part of what identifies us as human beings. According to some mefarshim, that's the meaning of Telem Elokim. We have the ability to make free choices. And that's and the Haggadah is teaching us, the Eser Makos teach us, that that's not something to take for granted. That's something that if a person uses the wrong way, Hashem can take away. It's not a guarantee. Hashem empowered us and gave us that ability to choose freely only if we make the right decisions. And that's part of the lesson of the Haggadah also, that we learn not only to take Hashem seriously, of course, but to take ourselves seriously as well and not take for granted our capacity for free choice.
So let's talk a little bit about the maror. Let's do a survey. What do people use at their seder for maror? Josh, what do you use? That your
endive.
Fancy. Anybody else? Anybody use the dreaded horseradish root? Yeah. So according to the Gemara, according to the Mishnah in Pesachim, doesn't mention horseradish root. Why do we descendants of Ashkenazic Jews eat the horseradish root?
That's what they had in America.
Yeah, because it was hard to get endive in Poland in the early spring. I remember my grandfather Zichron Alevracha going out in the backyard, wearing only his undershirt with the horseradish root and a grater, grating the horseradish to give everybody their spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down at the Seder. My father-in-law grew up in a house, and I like to use romaine lettuce. So why is that a prevalent minhag among families? What do we think? Romaine lettuce? Anybody? Can we ask people at home? Everybody's muted. Okay. Romaine lettuce, why romaine lettuce? Oh, because the Gemara said so. So why did the Gemara say romaine lettuce? So the romaine lettuce is actually very interesting. When you eat the romaine lettuce, it starts off nice and sweet and palatable, and then on the back end, it has that bitter aftertaste. So very symbolically, it's very symbolic of the experience our ancestors had in Eretz Yisrael. They got literally the royal treatment when they arrived. They got beautiful homes. They got to live in their own compound. They were treated very, very chashuv, according to the Medrash. All of the brothers also became senior officers in the Paro, I'm going to go with regime. You could argue about it later. And then slowly, 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 there was reversal of fortune, because what the Haggadah is trying to do is trying not just to have us remembering it happened to them, but to be having an experience where it's actually happening to me. I am celebrating on this evening that I myself am coming out of Mitzrayim, and I have a personal debt, not an old debt for my great-great-great-great-grandfather, but it's my own personal debt. So having these corporeal experiences of the sweet lettuce having the bitter back taste, that's there to teach us that it didn't just happen to them, but it also happened to me. By the way, anybody know what number Pesach we're celebrating this year? The only reason I know this is because in school the other day, one of my colleagues, 8-year-old kid, said 3,334. This is Pesach 3,334. But I would like to suggest we should be celebrating it like it's Pesach number 2 instead of Pesach number 3,334. It happened not only to them, but it also happened to me. So.
Okay, moving to Hallel. We say Hallel at the end of the Seder. Why is it that we say Hallel at the end of the Seder? No other time of year do we say Hallel, not during davening. So why do we say Hallel at the Seder? There are two explanations. The Ran explains that the reason we say Hallel at the end of the Seder is it's a zikar to the Karban Pesach. Because there was a mitzvah, the Mishnayos and Pesachim described that when the Karban Pesach was brought, there was a mitzvah to say Hallel together with the Karban Pesach. So on the Seder night, nowadays we don't have a Karban Pesach anymore, but we have the Afikoman. As Dov mentioned before, Rabbi Fink mentioned before, in place of the Karban Pesach, we have the Afikoman. And therefore, we say Hallel in order to remind ourselves of the mitzvah of Hallel that was done together with the Karban Pesach. The Brisker Rav gives another explanation. The Brisker Rav says the reason for Hallel on the night of Pesach is because, as Rabbi Rosenblum just mentioned, we have a chiyuv liros es atzmo kilu yotzei mi-Mitzrayim, and we have a chiyuv to see ourselves as if we just left Mitzrayim. And therefore, when we just underwent the experience of leaving Mitzrayim, so now we're overjoyed, we're rejoicing over the geula that we just experienced, and so we erupt in song in Hallel to Hashem. And Rav Schechter has pointed out, based on a comment of Rav Haigon, that this is the reason that there's no bracha on this Hallel. Usually when we say Hallel, we make a bracha. Why is there no bracha on the Hallel at the Seder? So the reason is because exactly this idea, it's a spontaneous Hallel. Normally Hallel is a ritual, it's a mitzvah. We prepare for that Hallel at the Seder. It's spontaneous. We've just had the experience of leaving Mitzrayim. Now we erupt in song. We erupt in Shira. It's all part of this chiyuv to see ourselves as if we left Mitzrayim. So just a small comment on this chiyuv. What is this idea of liros es atzmo kilu yotzei mi-Mitzrayim? It sounds difficult and sounds like something that's
challenging avoda,
certainly challenging I was looking for a word even more than challenging. To actually see ourselves as if we left Mitzrayim, that's not an easy thing to do. As I saw also, Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht offers an explanation of this idea, which is something that makes it more attainable. And perhaps it is what Chazal had in mind. Rav Goldwicht writes that inside a person, we all have our nefesh as two kochos. We have a koach of deya and a koach hamedameh. The koach hadeya means knowledge, and koach hamedameh means either our feeling or our imagination. That we can not only know something, but we can feel it viscerally. We can imagine about it. We can do something with it and bring it not only from in the dry knowledge in our minds, but also feel what it is that we are describing. And Rav Goldwicht explains, yeah.
Koach medame and koach
yedia? Deya. Deya is knowledge. Medame is imagination. Rav Goldwicht draws upon a halacha, that there's a halacha if a person sees a place where a nes was done for him, where a miracle was done for him, so he makes a bracha. Why does he make a bracha when he sees the place? The miracle is not done at that time. Let's say it's 10 years after the miracle. He just sees the place, but he makes a bracha. So Rav Goldwicht explains, because when a person sees the place where a miracle was done for him, emotionally it charges him to re-experience on some level some of those emotions that went into the nes, and therefore he can make a bracha as if he's re-experiencing the nes. And he explains that's what the Torah has in mind for the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. That Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just about intellectually processing the knowledge of the story of Yetziyat Mitzrayim, but also feeling the story, also internalizing it, not only relating to the story with the Koach HaDeya, but also with the Koach HaMedameh. And he says, that's why when we tell this story, we have Pesach, Matzah, and Mara, and we explain the reasons. This is the Pesach which one time when we had a Karban Pesach, it was brought in Mitzrayim. And this is the Matzah that we ran out of Mitzrayim and the dough didn't have time to rise. And this is the Mara that our fathers ate in Mitzrayim. And we recline and we drink Dalet Kozel, all for the purpose of reenacting the story in order that we should feel some, we should feel it on a more visceral level in order to experience the story. So this is part of what we're trying to accomplish with the Leil HaSeder, and this is the reason, explains the Brisker Rav, that at the end of all that, now that we've experienced the emotions of Yetziyat Mitzrayim, we erupt in this spontaneous hallel of thanking Hashem.
Rami Ovid Avi, I think, is one of my favorite parts of the Haggadah, and not just because it comes from my Bar Mitzvah Parsha, which is Parsha Kisavo. So I have fond memories of leaning mitzvokim when we would get up to them in our family. But it's very strange. Of all the psukim to choose to tell the story, why the psukim way towards the end of the Torah, one of the last parshios, at the end of Devarim, in Parsha Kisavo, we have the Shemos, Va'ira, Bo, V'Shalach, which tell the story directly. So of all the places to choose, and if you think about it, in all of the Haggadah, where do we actually tell the story? We do a lot of things that remind us of different aspects of the story, and we've discussed so many of them already, but where do we tell the story? It's when we make the drashas, when we darshan, we expand on the psukim that come from the end of Sefer Devarim from Parshas Kisavo, Arami Ovid Avi. So what are these psukim about? And why are these the ones that were chosen for us to tell over the story? So this is, it's the story of Mikra Bikurim. Mikra Bikurim is a farmer who has noticed that the first fruits have just begun to blossom. He ties a string around them, and when they mature, so he brings them to the Beis HaMikdash with great fanfare, and he presents them to the Kohen. And when he presents them to the Kohen, so he does what we call Mikra Bikurim. He reads the Parsha. He reads these psukim. And he makes these declarations. He reviews, in shorthand, the entire events of Sefer Yetziyat Mitzrayim, the events of going down to Mitzrayim, the events of redeeming ourselves from Mitzrayim. And basically, in shorthand, we review all the different aspects that we touch on at the Leil HaSeder of Sefer Yetziyat Mitzrayim. The Malbim makes a comment, which on the surface could seem somewhat humorous, but I think is very deep, that the Malbim says that to go through Shemos Va'era Bo V'Shalach, Magid's long enough already. To go through all those psukim, it's very, very long. So therefore, we go to the psukim in Parshas Kisavo, Arami Ovid Avi, which tells the story in shorthand to get the cliff notes of the story, to touch on the main points. But I think the Malbim himself even addresses this, many others do as well, that the point of the drasha is in many ways to expand on it. Not just to read the words, not just to read the text, but to make the story your own, as we've alluded to so many times already, the Chol Dor V'Dor Chayev Adam Liros Es Atzmo, to see yourself as if you're leaving Mitzrayim. In order to do that, so you can't go back to the Psukim and Shemos, Va'era Bo, and read them directly, because if you do, you can mistakenly read those Psukim as though they were a historical event. They happened to other people long ago. They're not part of my identity, not part of my own personal history. A personal individual history which has ups and downs, has maskel beginus, has starting with things that perhaps are challenging, things that were setbacks, u'misayim b'shevach, but hopefully ends with a place which is where we could praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the greatness that he has bestowed upon us. And perhaps that's why we choose the psukim sui from Arami Ovid Avi. On the one level, they're short. But they're short by design, to give us the cliff notes that are able to make, through them, we're able to make them our own. To expand on the foundations that existed within Sefer Yetziyat Mitzrayim, and to then bring those into our own lives. To think of ways in which Vayanu Osanu, ways that we perhaps in some ways felt afflicted, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeemed us from that. To make it our own. Rav Rosweig termed this looking at it from afar, looking at Yetzias Mitzrayim, not as if we're in the moment, but in some ways more powerfully in the moment, looking at it from afar. Like the farmer who comes in his own calendar cycle towards the end of the agricultural process after he spent a year working, toiling the field, going through so much effort, and then waiting for that moment, which only Hashem could really do, of Hamotzi Lechem in Ha'aretz, of bringing the fruit out from the ground, Borei Pri Ha'adama, Borei Pri Ha'etz, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings the rain, which then eventually is able to bring that first fruit, and he brings it to Hashem and says thank you, but not just thank you for this one individual moment, but thank you for the broader context within which my life exists, going back to, of course, the beginning, Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that's why I believe we darshan the psukim from Aram Yovirav, of all the places to choose to go and tell the story, we tell it from here. Because it's a story, not just something that happened in the history, but a story through which we has redefined every single aspect of our life, the relationship we have with Hashem, the Hashkacha Hashem has with us. And through these psukim, we're able to not just tell a story, but tell the story of ourselves.
Thank you again for all the beautiful Divrei Torah. I want to conclude our Seder tonight with, of course, with Nirta. And once again, challenging because at the end of the Seder, who wants to hear about Nirta? We're already half asleep, but I promise you it's kedai to say this over your Seder, at least at lunch the next day if you can't say it over at night. The Arizal has a fascinating minhag that's quoted by the Sifrei Chassidus especially, that before Nirta, he says a special tefillah, which we say in other parts of the Seder, for matzah, Amara, what's that tefillah? Hinni muchan, umuzuman, l'kayim. Right, there's a tefillah you say before every mitzvah. Now, of course, no, Rabbi Yehuda didn't like those tefillahs. He left them out. Different discussion for a different time. But it's kind of odd. You know, for matzah we understand, kaddish we understand, mara we understand, we're doing a mitzvah. But why would the Arizal say, hinni muchan, umuzuman, a tefillah that I am now ready to say nirta? Nirta is not a mitzvah. In fact, certain haggadahs, leave it out. It's not even said in certain locations, certain communities. So what's the Arizal saying, a special tefillah, please God accept my nirta, there's not a mitzvah. The Belzer Rebbe Zatzal said an amazing thing. He said a person could think to themselves, I spent the entire 4, 5, 6 hours. I said Kiddush, I ate matzah, I ate maror, I told the story of the Exodus, I did magid, and I didn't do it well enough. It doesn't have the right feel. Maybe I didn't have the right kavanos, the right intent. Maybe it's all for naught. Belzer Rebbe said, what's nirta? It's ritzui. It's saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, saying to God, you know what? I'm not sure it all became before me, all that I did the last 6 hours, if it was good enough, but you know what? I'm ready to present it before you. And that's nirta. I was thinking of a mashal to understand this. I was thinking of somebody who writes an email, a really important email, to a boss or to a colleague or to a friend with all very important points. And they haven't hit the send button yet. Nirta, lahav, the rights of Belzer Rebbe, is a send button. All the mitzvot of the night, all the divrei Torah of the night are hanging in the balance, ready to go kalpei shmaya towards God. And what does Nirta do? Nirta hits the send button. It's a beautiful thought by the Belzer Rebbe on this tefillah of the Arizal. And for our last thought for tonight, every year there's a minhag to find something new about Chag Gadiah. Those of you who remember 3-4 years ago, I wrote my own little poem about Chag Gadiah, and I shared it. The Chasam Sofer, of course, the Vilna Gaon, has their mahalach what Chag Gadiah means. I suggested a couple of years ago, I'm not saying it's correct, but I think it's a beautiful idea. The Zabin Abba Bitzrei Zuzeh, the Abba being HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what is Trei Zuzeh? That's the Luchos. The Abba bought us with 2 Luchos, with the Torah. That's my own thought. I think it's nice to share anyway. But I want to share this year an amazing piece from the Tashbeis. And it's truly unbelievable. The Tashbeis writes on Chag Gadiah the most incredible thought. And here's what he says. The Vilna Gaon, the Chasam Sofer, want to interpret what's the cat and the dog and the stick and the fire and the Malacham Aves. What does it all mean? So I want to write what it means. You know what Tashbeis says? The Tashbeis says, not that they're all wrong, but we're all wrong. What do you mean? It actually has no meaning. The Baal Haggadah put Chag Gadah there for one reason and one reason only. Because at the end of the night, we're really tired. We're running out of steam. And of course, at the end of every Haggadah, what does it say at the end of the Haggadah? Even though the Haggadah ends here, but mitzvah will stop there for the entire night. And I say to my family, good night. I'm finished. No more energy left, right? So why is Chag Gadah there? Right to Tashbeit, you know why it's there? Because nobody could ever understand Chag Gadah. And there's going to be a big machlokes. Is it the Vilna Gaon and the Chasam Sofer? What does Chag Gadah mean? I know what's going to happen. We'll get so involved in the discussion of Chag Gadah, what it means. Is this right? Is that right? Is he right? Is she right? What's going to happen? We'll get our koach back. Our energy back. And what are we going to do next? Stay up for another hour or 2 hours doing what? Telling the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's simply a placeholder. It's to allow us the mamshich the Seder into the rest of the night. If you say nothing else, you heard so many beautiful Divrei Torah tonight, really exquisite, beautiful ideas. It's worthwhile to say, certainly a lunch the next day. But that's Chag Gadah Tash Beitz. Thank you again all for joining us tonight annually in such a bracha to share Divrei Torah. Wishing all of you and your families a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, an uplifting, meaningful, inspiring evening at the Lech HaSeder, the Shabbos, the Yom.
And you're excited.